Welcome to the Wealth Steading Podcast. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm the founder and money manager at InvestableWealth.com. Today is September 29th, 2014. This is episode 32. Every episode of the Wealth Steading Podcast is based on the 10 wealth building principles. We're here to talk about wealth as a lifestyle. I personally believe that it can be a realistic objective for any hardworking, middle-class American citizen to become financially independent. It's hard work. It's prudent saving and investing. Yes, and it is a little bit of luck. But that's what we talk about here on the Wealth Steading Podcast, where we believe that money may not buy you happiness, but it can buy you freedom. In today's episode, we're going to discuss high income earners versus people with high net worth. This is a difference with a big distinction, and if you've been brainwashed by the media, you may not know where the true differences break down. That's what we're going to discuss today, and it has everything to do with the wealth steading lifestyle. I'm also going to do a brief market update. Just because the markets have been so volatile, so unpredictable, I do want to briefly comment on that. But before we get started, let me welcome all the new listeners. I'm amazed and grateful whenever I look at the download statistics and I see how many new people are joining the show every day. Recently, when I was digging down into the listener data, I was pleasantly surprised to see that we apparently have several listeners in the Philippines. Well, if you're in the Philippines and you're downloading this podcast, I'd love to hear from you. I have a soft spot in my heart for the Philippines. I got to spend a little bit of time there when I was deployed with the Marine Corps, learned how to scuba dive there. What a beautiful country, and the people are so warm and so welcoming. If you've never been to the Philippines, I'd encourage you to put that on your list. I'd go there before I'd ever go to Hawaii. So if you are from the Philippines and you're listening to this podcast, reach out to me. I'd love to hear from you. And speaking of hearing from you, listeners, I really appreciate all the reviews we're getting in places like iTunes and on Stitcher. It definitely is having an impact with the ratings and having this podcast attract a new audience. I'm very grateful for those of you that are telling people about it on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever your social media preference is. Thanks so much for that. You won't see me advertising on social media. I'm constrained with what I can and can't do because of my investment license. But if you want to tell people about this podcast, I'd certainly appreciate it. And if you are telling people about this podcast, don't be shy about letting me know that. I am getting more and more emails and hearing more from you listeners, so I apologize if I've gotten to the point now where I can't respond to every email. But rest assured, I do personally read every email, and even though I may not mention your name or specifically address your question as you wrote it, I do try and put them into a conglomerate and use that as a framework when I do answer listener questions in this podcast. So I try and take your specific question and apply it to the more general audience. So please keep sending those emails. I am reading every one of them. But don't be surprised if you do hear from me, because I do try and answer them when I get an opportunity. If you are a new listener and you haven't listened to the first 10 episodes, go back and do that. That's where I lay down the foundation of the 10 wealth building principles. If you're referring this show to a friend, I'd also recommend that you have them start there. Those aren't things I read in a book or anybody taught me. I just learned them from my near 30 years of experience of building my own wealth. I can't guarantee they'll work for you, but they did for me, and that's why I'm able to bring you this podcast. Now let's jump right into our market review. The markets have been crazy volatile. One day they're hitting new highs, and then in a session or two they're dropping 2 or 3%. This is not a time to just be getting into the market, so if you've resisted entering the market up to this point, my personal opinion is that you should wait a little longer. These can be turbulent times. I say that because if you go to a place like investors.com, you can see charts of the indexes, and there you can see that the daily volatility has been much higher than average. And what I really wanted to point out in this market update is that we're tending to hover right around the 50-day moving average. Now, I know I hear from some of you every now and then that you don't believe in the trend following or the momentum type investing that I talk about. You don't really believe in the charting aspect of it. And if you listen specifically to the way I talk about it, I'm not telling you that I believe in some big algorithm or anything like that. I just believe in human nature. And I believe that the stock market, over time, follows a particular pattern. It has less to do with the economy and the overall stock market than it does with human nature. And because human nature doesn't change, you can see patterns when you look at charts of either the indexes or individual stocks. That's my belief. So one thing I talked to you about is the importance of moving averages. For example, one of the most critical ones is the 50-day moving average. Now we're hovering right around that 50-day moving average. About 2 weeks ago, we came close to bouncing off of it. Then a couple sessions ago, the indexes went through it and then they recovered and now they're hovering right on it. That's important. As I've mentioned before, that 50-day, that can be an indication of whether we're on thin ice or we're not on thin ice. If the indexes or a particular stock hits the 50-day average and then either holds there or bounces off or immediately bounces off, that can be an indication to you that that might be a good entry point to get into that stock or to get into the market as an overall index. That's showing that overall, investors have confidence in the stock market when it hits that 50-day and bounces higher. In that example, the 50-day moving average would be acting as support. It's acting like a floor. It's not allowing the price of the stock or the index to go below that. Now, there's no magic involved in there. There's a lot of reasons that happens. We're not going to get into that now. But what you have to be cautious of is when the index or the individual stock breaks below its 50-day moving average, when that average no longer acts as support and the price falls below that and well below that. And then what you'll see in many cases is rather than that moving average acting as support for the stock, it actually acts as resistance. And then you'll see the price of that stock. It'll move up to where it hits the price of that average and it won't be able to break through it. It'll be like a glass ceiling. That'll become resistance. It'll hit there and it'll bounce down instead of bouncing up. That's what you want to be conscious of. That's when I talk about the stock or the index or the market being on thin ice. When the 50-day moving average is acting like resistance, that's thin ice, and you should be concerned. If you haven't already taken profits, if you haven't gotten out of the market, that might be a good time for you to reconsider and think about it. That's not necessarily the time to be buying into the market. I bring all this up now as I talk about this turbulent market that we're currently in. And again, I want to refer you back to a website like investors.com or wherever you do your charting at. So look at the S&P 500 or look at the NASDAQ. Those are the two major indexes. If your charting program will show you the 50-day moving average, that's what I want you to hone in on. Look at where we're at over the past three trading sessions. And again, I'm recording this September 29th, 2014. Today, the S&P closed pretty much dead on, right on its 50-day moving average. It tried to get a little bit above that during the day. It was quite a bit below that, but it did recover in the upper part of its daily range and right on the average. That's actually a pretty good sign. In the previous session, it also closed at the top of its daily average, but again, it had broken through that 50-day moving average. In the previous session of that, the index dropped significantly. It closed at the very dead-end bottom of its daily average and well below the 50-day moving average. So you can see a trend where the market had gone up. It just five, six sessions ago, it had hit a record high, and then boom, it falls down, and it's either just below or just above its 50-day moving average. So the question again is, are we on thin ice? Is that going to break through that 50-day moving average, or is it going to stay right where it's at, or is it going to bounce off and go higher? We have no way of knowing. No one does. But as I keep saying, what's important is that you know that that's thin ice. When you get that close to the 50-day moving average, you just want to be cautious. You want to make sure that support doesn't turn into resistance. Also, look back to the end of July, beginning of August. You'll again see when the market had made new highs in mid-July within a few five or six sessions, had precipitously and deeply dropped on one particular trading session, dropped well below the 50-day moving average, and then it tapered down for a few more sessions. Eventually, it did pull through and break up above its 50-day moving average. If you were risky, that would have been a time to jump back into the market. I personally held off on that. I saw more risk than reward at this point with the market being in the season it's in and being at the tops that it's at. But again, that's just my own personal opinion. But look at a chart that'll show you that 50-day moving average, see how the market's acting now, see how it acted back in early August and the relationship with that 50-day moving average. I think you'll find it instructive. And I'm talking about the S&P 500. You'll essentially see the same thing if you look at the NASDAQ. So all I'll say in reference to the very turbulent, volatile market that we're in right now, I'd just say be cautious. Now on to our main topic for this podcast. I want to talk to you about high net worth income versus having a high net worth. They're two very different and distinct things. Now, most people would say, hey, I'm not a high income earner, so I can never have a high net worth. Or they'll say, hey, look at that guy. He's a high income earner. He's a heart surgeon. He's making $500,000 a year. He's really rich. Well, that may not be the case. And in fact, often it is not the case. In this podcast, I'm not going to go into details about high income earners that I know or I've met that have absolutely no net worth. Trust me on this, though. I would roughly say probably at least a third of high income earners are Joe Sixpack, living paycheck to paycheck. In fact, I call them country club Carls, but I don't want to dwell on that today. I don't want to dwell on the lifestyle. I just want to look at the numbers. There's some recent census data and some other polling data that has come out that I want to share with you. And it makes a case for what I'm talking about for these Joe Sixpack country club Carls. Do you know what the income level is to be in the upper 1%? Now, you know, this top 1%, these are the people that we're supposed to hate. These are the people that we're supposed to really want to lay heavy taxes on. This is the income disparity that we're supposed to be jealous of and covetous of. because they have it all and we don't, and they're greedy SOBs. Well, I don't believe that for 1 minute, but that's what a lot of people in our country want you to believe. Well, today, what I want to talk about in reference to these top 1% earners, what I want to point out and make sure you really understand is even though it takes a lot to be in that top 1% income earners, I mean, I know relatively few people that are making enough income to qualify themselves as top 1% earners, but, and I'll get to that but in a minute. So listen to this. How much do you think you have to make to be in that top 1% bracket for income earners? Well, your adjusted gross income, that's household income, it has to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $390,000. Now, again, I live in mid-America. My relationships, the people I do business with and that I enjoy spending my time with, they tend to be just solid middle-class people. They're not making that kind of an income. Again, some professionals are. There are a lot of doctors and people like that that fit into that category. But $390,000, that's a lot of money. That's a high income level. And then obviously, that's where the top 1% are. But here's what I want to point out. These people that are making, you know, roughly $400,000, and to throw in a rounding error, you can basically say they're making almost $500,000 a year. That's the top 1%. Well, so the corollary question to that is, well, where do you have to be in the top 1% for net worth? And remember, there's a big difference between what's your net worth and what do you earn. Net worth is how much do you really have after you pay off all your liabilities, after you pay off your cars and your mortgage and your credit cards and all that kind of stuff, your student loans, after you pay all that off. If you paid it all off and sold it all, what would be that bottom line number? What are you actually worth? What is your net worth? Well, to be in the top 1%, these are the super rich people that we're supposed to believe are just a bunch of cold-hearted rich Scrooges, and we're supposed to want to tax them and take away all their property, or at least half of it. So how much do these people really have, the top 1%? What's their net worth? What do you need to be to qualify in that top 1%? Well, it's only a little bit less than $2.4 million. Now, a lot of you may be saying, hey, $2.4 million, that's a lot of money. Let me tell you something. As I mentioned, my roots, my friendships, my clients, the people I hang out with, we are solidly in the middle class. And although I know very few people that are making $300,000, $400,000 a year, I know plenty of people that have a net worth of $2 or $2.5 or $2.3 million. These are people that are either right at or close to being in the richest 1%. So how can that be? How can I know so many middle class people that are in the top 1%? When in fact, I would say virtually all of them on a consistent basis are making less than $150,000, maybe more like $100,000. Some of them, in fact, maybe only $75,000, $80,000 a year. And again, while that's significantly above the $50,000 or so average household income, it's not that much more. It's not as much as you would think it would take to be in the upper 1% in net worth. So I don't know if the big takeaway in this podcast is that you don't have to make very much money to eventually make it into the top 1%. Or maybe the topic should be, how come we have so many high net worth earners and yet none of them have any net worth? Well, I think based on the demographics of this podcast, of people I at least have been in communication with, most of you are pretty good savers. You have a pretty good understanding of my 10 wealth building principles, and you know that it's about earning, saving, and then investing. And you're focusing on the saving part now. So even if you're not at that top 1% or top 10% of people with net worth in this country, you're on your way to being there. You're not the people that have $30,000 or $40,000 in unsecured loans on credit cards. So I'm not going to focus on that spending side of the equation. Not in this podcast anyways. And for the few of you out there that listen to this podcast that are heavy spenders, that are big time consumers, well, hopefully you'll go back and you'll listen to those 10 wealth building principles and you'll start applying them into your life. Because otherwise you're going to be in trouble. Let's talk a little bit more about these numbers. So I told you where you had to be in the top 1%. Well, what about the top 10%? Okay, so to be in the top 10% of income earners, you have to make somewhere around $120,000 a year. Now, I do know plenty of people in that category. And as I state over and over again, it's my life experience that if you're making anywhere near $120,000 a year, you can easily be attaining wealth. And over the course of your career, you should definitely be in that upper 1% of net worth. You should easily have over $2 million. Now, I'm not talking about having that when you're in your late 20s or early 30s. I'm talking about that's what you would build over the course of your working career if you live prudently and save and invest wisely and follow the wealth-steading lifestyle. So what about the top 10% as far as net worth? To qualify as the top 10% for net worth, you only have to have around $650,000. Now, I'm not saying that's not a lot of money. I'm just saying that's all it takes to get in the top 10%. That's really a pitifully small number if you think about it. You see, I say that's a pitifully small amount because think about it. $650,000, $700,000, that doesn't go very far. And I'm not talking about this as being investment income. I'm not saying this is what the top 10% have to invest in the stock market. This is their entire net worth. This would include the equity they have in their home, their furniture, their cars, everything. $650,000, $700,000. When you think of someone that's maybe 65 or 70, and they've worked all their life, they've saved all their life, they have nowhere near this amount because they're not in the top 10% wealthiest people. And that's why they're just barely getting by living off their Social Security. Do you want to be that way? I sure don't. The average household net worth is only around $70,000. Think about that. That includes all the retired people, all the people that have been working 20, 30 years of their life, all these baby boomers. And yet if you take the average, it's only about $70,000. America is broke. You need to position yourself in such a way that you're not broke. You need to figure out what you need to do in your personal life to be well above that wealthiest 10%. In fact, I would say if you're someone right now that's in your, say, 40s or 50s, you need to have a goal of by the time you're 65, in this 1%, you need to have somewhere over $2 million. That's what it's going to take to lead a healthy middle-class lifestyle as you go into your final years when you're 65, 70, 80 years old. Because of cost of living increases, because of the devaluation of the dollar, because of inflation, because of rising medical costs, if you want to be comfortable, you're going to need to have somewhere around $2 million. Now remember, as of today, that's only 1% of the entire population. That's the level of these greedy SOBs that we're supposed to think are corporate titans. So don't believe the propaganda from those on the left that the richest 1% control all the world and have all the money. We're not talking about all these billionaires. We're talking about a lot of people that just have right around a couple million dollars. And that's what it takes to have a comfortable lifestyle. That's what it takes to be middle class and be financially independent.
So what about this $2 million number? Did I just pull it out of thin air? No, let me show you how I calculated it.
A few episodes ago, I mentioned what I mean when I talk about being financially independent. My definition for someone that's financially independent, it's that they have at least 10 years of earnings, or you can look at it differently. Is that earnings or is that cost of living? I like to look at it as 10 years worth of earnings. And I'm not saying that that makes you rich or even wealthy. And that's why I like to talk about people being not necessarily rich or wealthy, but being financially independent. And where I come up with that 10 times number, that's kind of like the minimum that you need. If you think about how much term life insurance should you have, or how much savings do you have to, you know, to be sort of comfortable, you should start at that 10 times figure. Again, that is, I'm not saying that's the ultimate number. I'm not just saying that's a perfect number for everybody, but it's a pretty good minimum starting point. If you're 30 years old, you're making $50,000 and you're figuring out how much term life insurance do I need to buy to support my wife and two kids. Well, again, if you're making $50,000, 10 times that would be $500,000. So roughly, just a rule of thumb. Again, this isn't written in stone. I'm just giving you a starting point. You should probably be thinking something like, well, I need at least $500,000, 10 times my earnings, to at a minimum support my family. Again, just a starting point, something to think about. So roughly, that's sort of where I've come up with my 10 times earnings to determine whether you're financially independent or not. Now remember, I'm using this as just a broad rule of thumb. If you have 10 times your earnings saved up, that doesn't make you a billionaire. That doesn't mean that you can go out and throw caution to the wind and just live whatever kind of lifestyle you want to live. But what it does mean is that you can probably live a middle-class American lifestyle for about the next 10 years. Now inflation's going to play into that, and time value of money, and unexpected uncertainties in your health and things like that. Sure, that'll all apply. But roughly, broadly speaking, you could survive for the next 10 years without having to lift a finger, without having to work. That's where the independence comes in. Doesn't mean you don't have to work for the rest of your life. Doesn't mean you won't not work for the rest of your life. It doesn't mean you're quitting your job tomorrow. It just means that you can make choices. You have flexibility. You don't have to live paycheck to paycheck. You don't have to worry about if you lost your job tomorrow that you'd be financially ruined. So it gives you options. It makes you independent. And that's why I call it being financially independent. Now, obviously, it would be better if you had 15 or 20 or 30 times your earnings saved up. That's when you start getting into the realm of securely being wealthy. More is obviously better, but 10 times is at least a starting point. And again, when I talked about your household income and I mentioned $100,000, that doesn't mean your take-home pay is $100,000. That's your total earnings. So if you're making $100,000, you got to figure taxes are coming out of that. That's not only income taxes, but payroll taxes. And if you're a diligent saver like I preach in the wealth studying lifestyle, then you're also saving, 15, 20, 25% of your earnings, hopefully more at that age. And so you're living well below $100,000. Maybe your lifestyle is only spending something like $60,000 after taxes and savings and things like that. And if you do retire at 65, then potentially your expenses are going to go down from not having to commute to work, not having to buy work clothes, not having to, all the associated expenses with having to maintain a career. So if you're really only spending somewhere in the neighborhood of, $60,000, $65,000 a year.
So at age 65, if you had $1.3 million of net worth, that would give you about 20 years of living expenses. And if you spend every penny, it would carry you out until you're at least 85 years old. Now, obviously, your plan would be to invest that wisely and prudently and not spend every penny.
Again, this is not a perfect rule of thumb, and it's not the max, it's just the minimum. So you can use that formula to just kind of see, hey, where do I fit? Am I getting close?
And back to that $2 million number that you're going to need when you're, say, 65 or 70 years old. Again, let's do the math. Let's just say you're making $100,000. You want to be financially independent, so you want to have, say, 20 times your annual income in net worth. Well, that puts you at that $2 million mark. And sadly, because America's broke, that puts you in the top 1% of people with net worth. Let's think back to those statistics. The top 1% of income earners are making about $390,000. So even if they only had my minimum level for being financially independent, that would be 10 years of earnings saved up. That would put them at, $3.9, nearly $4 million. So for that top 1% of earners to be relatively financially independent, they should have a net worth of, say, $4 million. Well, what do they have? What was that top 1% of Americans' net worth? It's nowhere near $4 million. It's only $2.4 million. $2.4 million is nowhere near $4 million. America's a bunch of big spenders, but they're not big savers. And someday those chickens are going to come home to roost.
When it comes to saving and the money that you're going to need to put away for your old age, and I'm not going to say retirement because I really hope most of us never retire. Not that we have to keep working, but that we're working as long as we want, doing what we love, doing what we enjoy, and finding out a way to make a living and get compensated for it. Maybe having lifestyle businesses, things where we can take advantage of the tax code. But for you to get to that level, to be living that when you're, say, 65 or 70 years old, and I know for a lot of you that's a long way off, but trust me, it'll come up on you a lot quicker than you think. How much money are you going to need to have? Again, I can't tell you for sure, but it's like the old advice for when you go on vacation. When you're planning on a vacation, you should take half the clothes and twice the money you think you're going to need. And I would tell you that's good advice when it comes to saving for your retirement years or for funding your old age. It's a good idea to have twice the money you think you're going to need. As I said at the beginning of this podcast, I know plenty of people that are saying they're, 50s to 60s. They've worked all their life. They haven't made huge incomes. Oh, sure, above average, maybe 70 to up around $150,000. But those people that were diligent, that were wise, that were not spendthrifts, that didn't live a country club Carl lifestyle, those people are on target to have, say, anywhere from $1.5 million to $2.5 million. Again, it depended on their skill level. How good of an investor were they? Because when you start getting to that amount and you're not making a lot of money, if you're only making, above average $70,000, $150,000, the success that you have in building wealth at that point is more to do with your investment income than it has to do with your earnings and savings potential. Remember, I talk about that simple formula for determining your wealth. It's earnings plus savings plus investing. So first you have to learn how to earn. You have to earn a good solid income. And then it's about saving. You have to learn to be a saver. You can't spend every penny. In fact, you got to really crank up that savings. You got to be saving somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 20 or more percent. And then at that point, when you're an above average earner and you're at a well above average saver, then you can start thinking about being an investor. Don't try to be an investor if you're not earning or if you're not saving.
Don't focus on your investments until you have the earnings and the savings to support it.
But once you do that, and that generally happens when you're, say, in your 40s or in your 50s, that's that season or that time in your life when the middle class American can really concentrate on making investment income. But if you do that and you're successful at it, that's where it becomes exponential. That's where your investment income far outweighs your income from earnings, and very quickly could double or triple the size of your beginning net worth. It's that exponential time value of money that you want on your side. That's how you're going to be financially independent when you're, say, in your mid-50s or 60s or 70s. Again, it takes hard work. You have to be a good earner. You have to be a diligent saver. And it never hurts to have a little bit of luck. But if you set your mind to it, you can do it. I know that because of my own personal life experiences and because of so many people I know that have applied the wealth-steading lifestyle and have lived my 10 wealth-building principles. That'll wrap it up for today's episode. I really appreciate the time that you spend with me, the effort that you make to listen to this podcast. Again, thanks for your comments and your questions that you send me. I can be reached at the podcast website, which is wealthsteading.com. Until next time, this is John Pugliano, wishing you the very best of returns.